The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and criminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents. Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome. It is Thursday, May 13th, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the next 60 minutes of news, talk, information, interviews, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. We are brought to you by the Normal Foundation. You can check us out at normal.org. And coming to you live from Rolla J Studios here in beautiful Potland, Oregon, it's not a typo, it's a way of life. And joining us in our virtual studio in beautiful Astoria, Oregon, my good friend, half-sister, and president of the Goonies Fan Club, Cannabis Carrie.
I think there's a bunch of kids that would probably beat me up for that title.
Oh, Carrie, I think your mic level might be a little bit hot, so bring that down just a little bit.
And okay, how's that going?
A little better? A little distorted, but I think you're good for now. Also, folks who are longtime listeners of the show will know that our engineer Ganja John would normally be introduced right about now. But poor Ganja John, he fell down the stairs, not completely tumbled down the stairs, but kind of tripped down the stairs here for our studio and wrenched his ankle. And we thought it was just, you know, sprained ankle, basically. Well, it turns out he's got a bone chip in the ankle. And the doctor said, quote, his tendon is hanging on by a thread. So the doctor has ordered him wheelchair bound for the next 3 days. And that means he can't get down here into the studio. So Ganja John, if you're in the chat room, we miss you, buddy. And we'll see you coming up here on Monday. Also, speaking of Ganja John, I did want to make a note. There is a great article out in the Portland Tribune today. Check it out at portlandtribune.com, and it details the battle of Jim Klar, one of our Oregon medical marijuana activists, who is being denied a liver transplant by OHSU and Legacy Emanuel Health Centers because of his marijuana use. It's part of our ongoing series where we investigate how people's lives are being lost because they will be denied organ transplants, even though science shows that medical marijuana use has nothing to do with the survivability of an organ transplant. So I wanted to make sure we got that out of the way. Another thing I need to mention here is a book I picked up at the most recent spring gathering. This is Ed Rosenthal's Complete Marijuana Grower's Handbook. I think it's the 25th anniversary edition. Beautiful full-color stuff in there on everything you ever wanted to know about growing marijuana. There is a foreword by Tommy Chong and a preface by our own Keith Strop. And while I was there, I managed to get Tommy Chong's autograph on the foreword right here. And then, of course, I'll see Keith Strop later this year, get his autograph on the preface, and I'll get Ed Rosenthal's autograph on the whole darn thing. We're going to take this book and auction it off on eBay with all those signatures on it, with all the proceeds to benefit Normal Show Live. So stay tuned for that. We'll have more information. Cannabis Carrie brings us our hemp headlines right after the first break here. So Carrie, what's in the news today?
Well, today we're going to go to a story in Montana that, frankly, I'm just a little disappointed in, and I'll tell you all about that. We're going to go to a case in California that proponents are claiming victory on, and also we're going to look at another state that's taking a look at medical marijuana.
All right. Those stories coming up right after this first break. Also coming up on today's show at 20 after the hour, we do our daily Toker Tunes. Today is Groovin' Thursday, so JohnDoeRadio.com from Denver, Colorado brings us today's song from DJ Slim, a great tune called Don't Cry. At the bottom of the hour, 30 after the hour, we're going to go behind the headlines with Normal Deputy Director Paul Armentano. We're going to talk about the Obama administration's push to institute zero tolerance per se DUID laws. It's a lot of syllables, and it's very important that every cannabis consumer know exactly what that means. And at 45 after the hour, cops say legalize drugs. We'll be speaking with former Deputy Sheriff Leo Lawrence from San Diego. He's going to talk about CAMP, the campaign to against marijuana planting in California. That's when they fly those helicopters over the Emerald Triangle every year trying to eradicate all the marijuana plants. And you can tell how well that's gone for them. All that and more coming up on Normal Show Live today. Stick around. We are the voice of the marijuana nation. Check us out at stash.normal.org.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hello, I'm Radical Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal and host of Normal Show Live. Medical marijuana is legal in 14 states today, and I encourage you to visit MarijuanaDoctors.com to find a physician to help you obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in your state. In most medical marijuana states, patients qualify with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis, and other conditions which vary by state. Learn which conditions are covered in your state at MarijuanaDoctors.com. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, MarijuanaDoctors.com will help you find a physician online or by phone to obtain a permit for medical marijuana. MarijuanaDoctors.com is fully transparent and HIPAA compliant. Call 866-996-9333 today or visit MarijuanaDoctors.com. That's 866-996-9333 by phone or online at MarijuanaDoctors.com.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
Tribes near Missoula, Montana, announced on Wednesday that any medical marijuana providers on the Flathead Indian Reservation who sell to Indians can be charged with felony distribution. A spokesman for the tribe said that after consulting with elders from the Salish, Kootenai, and Pendorial peoples, the tribal council opted to retain their policy that makes the possession or sale of marijuana a criminal offense, saying that a consensus from the elders that marijuana has no cultural significance to them, and that as a people, they do have other indigenous means to control pain. As a sovereign Indian nation, the tribes have the option of adopting or not adopting state laws, and so while the state has legalized medical marijuana, the tribes have not. Their ruling will affect any non-tribal members if they provide marijuana to tribal members. If a Montana marijuana medical provider on the reservation supplies marijuana to a tribal member, that person would be subject to felony distribution charges. The announcement does not affect non-tribal medical marijuana consumers on the reservation, and the tribes have jurisdiction over tribal members and recognize Indians from other reservations located within the boundaries of the Flathead Reservation in northwest Montana. The county attorney cautions providers located on the reservation to ask about tribal affiliation before supplying anyone with medical marijuana. Rob McDonald, the spokesman for the tribe, said in his written statement that they would not embrace a system where medical marijuana can be provided by non-medical staff. The statement also went on to say that their local law enforcement has come across what they said is, quote, too many instances where medical marijuana consumers are convicted felons or under investigation for drug use or have been found to have convictions for the manufacture of methamphetamines, prescription drug violations, or other drug convictions in other states. After implying that medical marijuana users are most likely have criminal pasts, it seems unfortunately that if you have ever had a conviction, According at least to the tribes in Montana, you are not worthy of medical cannabis.
What an interesting story. Let me see if I get this straight. Native Americans are against a plant. Okay.
I would say just this tribe, but yes.
Yeah, this particular tribe. Yeah, we've got a group of Native Americans who are against a plant. Boy, that's things have kind of flip-flopped from the way you would expect them to be. Well, as Carrie mentions, you know, they are, you know, sovereign tribes. They can make up their own rules, I suppose. But first of all, I just want to address them saying that this only applies to people with tribal affiliation. Do you think the Flathead Indians here are trying to come up with a way to reduce their numbers? Because I know if I was a tribal member and I found out about this and I needed medical marijuana, the first thing I would do is revoke or give away my tribal affiliation, renounce my tribal affiliation. That's the word I was looking for. I don't know exactly how that works. I'd love to have someone on the show someday that has some legal understanding of how the laws work with respect to the tribes in this country. But sounds to me like they're just finding a way to reduce their numbers. And this notion about felons and medical marijuana. This is something we hear a lot. You know, people say, oh my God, felons are involved with medical marijuana. Well, yeah, in a lot of cases, these people who got their felonies got it for using medical marijuana before it was legal, right? So that's kind of unfair to be, castigating them as felons when they were doing what is legal now back then. It's just it wasn't legal back then. And then, of course, trying to drag methamphetamine manufacturing, these other things into it. Certainly, yes, there's going to be some situations where people with criminal backgrounds might get involved with marijuana. But let's remember one thing. If they were convicted and they served their time, they've paid their debt to society, right? Just because someone might have manufactured meth back in the 90s, is that any reason to deny them a life-fulfilling, pain-relieving medication? I don't think so. There's people that have all sorts of need for medical marijuana that have all sorts of backgrounds, and we shouldn't hold that against them when it comes to getting them medical care. I did it again, Carrie. Wrong button. Let's try this the right way.
It's okay. It makes the stories that are kind of a downer seem a little more happy.
I guess so.
Like this one. A California Superior Court has ruled that the city of Lake Forest, California, can shut down all medical marijuana dispensaries. Judge David Chafee made the ruling in response to lawsuits by the city that the dispensaries were violating zoning laws. Jeffrey Dunn, an attorney that represents the city, came out publicly after the ruling and said that it could set a precedent that could lead to communities shutting down every dispensary in California, boasting, quote, medical marijuana dispensaries aren't allowed in the city of Lake Forest and they shouldn't be allowed in any cities. That's the big story in all of this. The ruling only applies to the community of Lake Forest, which is currently the most densely populated city in South Orange County with around 80,000 residents. Dispensaries in the city will have to close down immediately unless they get a temporary stay. Attorney Dunn also tried to intimidate any dispensary owners from appealing Judge Chafee's ruling, saying that if the ruling was appealed and upheld, that it might make it applicable in the entire state of California. Judge Chafee ruled that the cities are legally prohibited from passing land use ordinances that violate state or federal law. And since marijuana is still illegal under federal law, land use allowing medical marijuana dispensaries would be prohibited. In his written ruling, the judge declared, "The United States Supreme Court has clearly stated that the use of marijuana is illegal, thereby affirming that there's no exception for medicinal use under California law. Moreover, any person using marijuana for medical purposes unambiguously provides that there is any conflict between federal or state law, they always know that federal law shall prevail. Unless and until Congress chooses to declassify this drug as a Schedule I narcotic, the substance remains illegal throughout the United States." The judge also ruled that because Lake Forest City's municipal code does not specifically allow dispensaries, they must be shut down. Defendants are barred from conducting, allowing, permitting, inhabiting, leasing, renting, or otherwise granting authority to use properties to conduct any cannabis business. Judge Chafee, who made the ruling, was also the judge who ruled in favor of the city of Anaheim when it banned dispensaries and sought to impose criminal penalties for operating them. The city of Lake Forest sued 35 people last September, including dispensary owners and retail landowners who rented space to them. 10 dispensaries have shut down since the suit was initiated, and 11 of the shops are currently operating. A lawyer who represents the dispensaries, Christopher Glue, said they will move for an immediate stay and will be appealing the ruling.
Well, I guess Lake Forest, California doesn't have any problems with its tax revenue base or employment because they can just shut down 10 or 11 places that are doing good business, paying sales taxes, employing citizens, and so on. This is that backlash I've been warning people about, the backlash against medical marijuana and specifically the backlash against dispensaries. It's more of that NIMBYism we get here in America, not in my backyard, NIMBY, where people seem to support people's rights to use medical cannabis. I mean, all the polls that we find still show support for medical marijuana above 60% all across the country, 70 to 80% in places in the Northeast and in the West Coast. Yet, where are these people supposed to get their medicine? From a dispensary. And that's the problem that people have, is they, for some reason, associate negative things with the buying and selling of cannabis. This is also goes to some breaking news that we got from John Doe before the show started about 7 raids by local authorities in Colorado Springs over dispensaries. And these raids are going to continue, and these shutdowns are going to continue, and these court cases are going to continue until we finally get past medical marijuana. I've been telling you people over and over again, medical marijuana was a great 20th century solution, a stopgap measure to at least take care of the most sick and frail among us. But here in the 21st century, if we don't start moving toward full legalization for all adults, it's just going to get more and more restrictive. We've seen it in the latest medical marijuana states like New Jersey that do not allow the right to home grow. We see it in the other states like Minnesota that was trying to make it that you could only get medical marijuana for terminal illnesses if you only had 6 months to live. It's going to get more and more restrictive until we finally just say enough. You don't need to be sick. You don't need to be religious. Any human being, any American citizen has the right to use cannabis for any purpose they choose. And they're going to continue to go back to the federal law until we do something about that. You'd think that maybe we would have some better effect with the current president.
In terms of legalization of drugs, I think that the war on drugs has been a utter failure. And I think that we need to rethink and reformalize our laws.
Yeah, that was Barack Obama back in 2004 when, before he was bought and paid for by the people who are against marijuana.
And more states are looking into the prospects of legalizing medical marijuana. Nebraska has entered the debate as activists in the Midwestern state push for legalization of medical cannabis. The state house has been getting so many calls about it that the Nebraska State Board of Pharmacies is planning to learn more about the pros and cons of medical marijuana during a meeting later this month. Kevin Borcher from the Nebraska Board of Pharmacy says that recent discussions have been bringing marijuana to the forefront of political issues more than ever before, and that they will be discussing it at a national meeting later this month with the pharmacy boards of other states. Borcher said the main issue on whether to recognize legalization is if it is worth it and if it is available to make it legal on a state level when on the federal level it remains illegal. Board Chairman Rick Zarek, a Gothenburg, Nebraska pharmacist, said Nebraskans hope to learn more about the pros and cons of legalization and any problems that have arisen in the 14 states that now allow marijuana to be used for pain relief, appetite enhancement, and other medical purposes. Nebraska is the only U.S. state with a unicameral legislature, that is, they only have one legislative chamber, not two, which might make it easier to get a medical marijuana bill passed. On the other hand, Nebraska's governor, Dave Heineman, said that he strongly opposes the use of marijuana in medical treatments.
How much more evidence do these people need to have that the prohibition of marijuana not only doesn't work, but makes everything worse? It gives us crime. It gives us marijuana that's so expensive, people are willing to break into your house for it. It gives us increased potency of marijuana, not necessarily a bad thing. Gives us the possibility of mold and the possibility of all these other things that in a regulated market would never be allowed. When's the last time you heard someone going blind from drinking liquor? Not likely, because now liquor is regulated and it's pure. But back in Prohibition, that happened all the time because it was illegal and could not be controlled. And as far as evidence is what's going on in the 14 states that have legalized the medical use of marijuana, teen use of marijuana has gone down, not just at the levels the rest of the country have gone down, but at greater rates than the rest of the country. And I have testimony from thousands of medical marijuana patients I've talked to and read about who have cut their pharmaceutical use in half to a third, to even getting rid of all of their pharmaceuticals simply through the use of safe, effective, non-toxic medical marijuana. If that doesn't say something good about America, I don't know what does. All right, that's the right time to hit that. It's 20 after the hour. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll have your Daily Toker Tunes Groovin' Thursday with DJ Slim and John Doe Radio.
It's 20 after the hour. We have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Law420.com.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well-trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today.
And now, a message from former President George W. Bush to remind the American people of our responsibility in our nation's war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
That's right, America, use less drugs. Put down the Prozac, the Vioxx, and the Levitra, and turn to the herb. Use less drugs. Our national policy is no longer just say no. It's now just slow down.
You get me too high. I overanalyze. If you've ever been too high, then you can sympathize. You get me too high. And I start to fly, I've said some silly thing, and that's the reason why.
Pop Pass Records.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we bring you tunes for Groovin' Thursday, our salute to all the dopest beats and killer rhymes that we find in the best of rap, hip-hop, soul, R&B, and funk. Brought to you by the John Doe Radio Show in Denver, Colorado. Accurate and informative marijuana reform news and entertainment. Available on the THC Media Network and johndoeradio.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org or mail your CD to Normal Outreach, 4110 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard, number 161, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
John Doe Radio.
John Doe with your Groovin' Thursday tune on Normal Show Live. DJ Slim, an activist and one of America's best hidden hip-hop secrets. I say secret because DJ Slim is not signed to a major label. From Boston, Massachusetts, he rocks it underground, toking on fat blunts and performing at get-togethers like the Boston Freedom Rally and Seattle Hemp Fest. As a follow-up to his first CD, Hemp Hits, which included some great tunes that won a few Marijuana Music Awards, DJ Slim has now released The Gardener on his own label, Puff Pass Records. The sound has improved, and so has the groove, with tunes like Got to Make It, Mr. Timberine Man, and Don't Cry, You Won't Be Disappointed. There's even a tune on there with my good buddies, the Tall Brothers from Canada. Add it to your playlist and enjoy a fellow activist's work in music, not to mention the support you should give by picking up the album. This selection, called Don't Cry, from DJ Slim. I am John Doe. Till we meet again, see ya.
With Mary Jane, like I go to work daily. A lot of ladies, man, that issue really drives me crazy. See, they don't understand how a piece of plant can get in the way of something that is so feminine. Now, don't get me wrong, love, I love my thick meat, and I love to kiss you, and I love to nibble feet, and I love to lick you till you flip like a fish. Then you'll understand how the pussy liquor represents. But when it comes to Mary Jane, it's sort of weird to me. She does things to make me understand myself, you see. She helps me comprehend with life on the daily and fade away when sucking MCs don't hear me. I try to tell you one thing, don't even question me. When it comes to Mary Jane, she surely gets the best of me. A lot of ladies can't take it, they try to ignore. Most of them get up and walk the hell out the door. I'd be like, hey, you know what I'm saying, baby? You beautiful and all, you know what I'm saying? But yo, I mean, look at it. We talking about Mary Jane, you know what I'm saying? Come on now, don't cry. Another chick see me pull up in my whip, thought that she could hop in with like two of her friends. I said, that's cool, if you ain't letting me lick, you got to split. They got all mad and shit. I told them, don't cry, babe, I'm married to Mary Jane, and she's my one love besides my family. And if you ain't down with that, then you best to beat it. Get rid of that extra cocaine, that shit ain't needed. This is the best high, she said bye-bye. Drove around a couple blocks, pulled up on another fly. She's already token, so it was a done deal. I said, yo, baby, hop in, Helen, you can take the wheel. She said cool and she whipped us to the spot, man. She was so fly and she rolled up some more pop, man. I said, hang on a minute, you smoking more than me. You got to get out, peace out, baby. Yo, man, you see, most of y'all don't understand, you know what I'm saying? Maybe she smoked more than me, then when she ran out, she gonna be on my shit, you know what I'm saying? I can't be supporting nobody like that. Yo, you know what I say? So many women try to go in competition. Say they can smoke more than me and they go on a mission. I tell them to slow down before they blow out their brains. They look at me like I'm dumb. Two toes later, they insane. They don't understand. I smoke the green gardening. Since I'm the gardener, nobody smokes it harder. And I tell ladies one thing, don't proceed, miss. Best to use some caution because you surely gonna need it. I don't smoke the tree bark brown that you're used to seeing. I smoke the type of weed to make you stand up and stop preaching. That's why you see me smoking every day, daily. And Mary Jane's the only lady I speak to daily. Now I know you're able to cook and clean and provide the good sex. Yeah, love, you know what I mean. But when the sex is over, guaranteed to be stressed. Followed up by a lot of other damn bullshit. You know what I'm saying? That's something I don't need. You know what I'm saying? See, that's why I smoke Mary Jane. You know what I'm saying? Because there is no stress. You know what I'm saying? But you know what I'm saying? Here we go, baby.
I think I know what you're saying. That's DJ Slim with Don't You Cry. Thanks to JohnDoeRadio.com for the great Groovin' Thursday music.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
All right, time to check our cannabis community calendar, which you can find at normal.org/calendar. Before we get to the week's events, I want to remind you that the Normal Aspen Legal Seminar is still taking reservations. It's June 10th through 12th at the Gant Hotel in Aspen, Colorado. Check out normal.org front page. There is a button on the right side for the Aspen Legal Seminar. This is our only legal seminar that gives continuing legal education credits to attorneys to help you fight marijuana laws, but it's also open to the public. And if you are an activist who wants to get real deep into the nitty gritty of the marijuana laws and how to beat them, this will be a big event for you to get to. So please check it out. Normal Aspen Legal Seminar. Also, the Normal National Conference takes place here in beautiful Potland, Oregon. That will be taking place September 9th through the 11th at the Governor's Hotel. So check that out online as well. Now, for our cannabis community calendar coming up on this Thursday tonight, May 13th, Pittsburgh Normal's having their monthly open meeting at the Ava Shadow Lounge facility on Baum Boulevard in Pittsburgh. Check out pittsburghnormal.org for details. On Friday, May 14th, a medical marijuana qualifying clinic at the North Bluff Chiropractic Center in Gladstone, Michigan. You can call 906-428-2225 for details. And on Friday, Ohio Normal is having their spring encampment at the Crazy River Ranch in Ohio. Check out ohionormal.org for more information. On Saturday, May 15th, Wisconsin Normal is having their statewide meeting at Mr. Ed's in Tomah, Wisconsin. For information, check out winormal.org. And Kansas City Normal in Kansas City, Missouri is having their public meeting at the Westport Coffee House in Kansas City. Check out kcnormal.org for details. For more information on all of these events, including names, email addresses, phone numbers, contacts, and more, check out the Cannabis Community Calendar at normal.org/calendar.
Hello, I'm Casper Leach, host of Time for Hemp. When our politicians passed the Marijuana Tax Act in 1937, the citizens of the United States had no idea that a new civil war had begun. Now, after more than 7 decades of this war's escalation and spending well over $1 trillion of taxpayers' money, the result has been an arrest record of more than 37 million brothers and sisters for nonviolent drug offenses. Every year, we choose to continue this war. We do so at the cost of well over $69 billion. Add to this, we are building prisons faster than we are building schools. In fact, the prison industry is now one of the fastest growing industries in the United States. We must end this civil war. We can with your help. Please, join LEAP, the law enforcement against prohibition, and become part of the solution to ending the war on drugs. Go to leap.cc and find out how to become a member.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
For almost 40 years, Normal has been the place to go for the latest studies and news on marijuana science, policy, and activism. For over a decade, one man at Normal has written and reviewed more studies and news stories regarding marijuana than almost anyone on the planet. First as senior policy analyst and now as deputy director, Normal's Paul Armentano has written for major newspapers, academic journals, and magazines on the subject of cannabis and is frequently requested as an expert witness in the courtroom. His knowledge and experience are an amazing asset to the cannabis community. Available to you now in a segment we call Behind the Headlines with Paul Armentano.
Welcome back, everyone. 32 after the hour, we're speaking with Normal Deputy Director Paul Armentano from his home in the Bay Area in California. Paul, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here, Rob.
I wanted to bring you on to discuss something that we had picked up in the Obama administration's latest drug control strategy. This has been released online. We have links to it at normal.org as well as stash.normal.org. And it pertains to a subject that you've researched very intensely and have all sorts of great information on. And I really think our listeners need to know about it. Tell our listeners about this concept that the Obama administration is pushing, this idea of per se DUID laws for marijuana users.
Sure. Just one thing I do want to clarify, though. You know, this isn't a new concept to this administration. The previous administration, I think back in 2003, actually set the ball in motion when they appropriated funding for the Department of Transportation and some other agencies to begin pushing for a coordinated statewide effort to enact these sort of per se laws for marijuana, or in some cases, zero-tolerant per se laws. And, you know, this is all under the guise that we're to believe that individuals are right now driving under the influence of drugs, driving under the influence of marijuana in these states. They're getting pulled over by law enforcement, and law enforcement, they are simply letting them go because they aren't able to arrest them or charge them or prosecute them under the law. And I've got to tell you, that is just bunk. It is illegal right now to drive impaired, whether you're impaired from alcohol, whether you're impaired from marijuana, whether you're impaired from illicit substances, whether you're impaired by legal diazepines. In all of these cases, it is illegal. It is a crime. It is considered driving under the influence. In the state of California, you can get 6 months in jail for your first offense. You will have your license revoked for 6 months. You won't be able to get it back until you attend a training course, and that is the conviction for driving under the influence of any controlled substance, whether it's legal or illegal. That's the law. So this notion that the feds have to come in and clamp down, pass this inflexible extremist policy, and impose it on all 50 states is ridiculous.
Yeah,
because right now, thousands of people are being prosecuted under these laws. They're being prosecuted for driving because they have residual levels of marijuana in their system. I know I'm brought in as an expert to speak to the defense to defend these sort of cases. The only difference is right now, the law makes the prosecution establish that these drivers are actually impaired. And what the feds want to do is get rid of that standard. The federal government and what this administration is pushing is to take away the standard that says the state actually has to show someone's driving impaired. And what they want to replace it with is simply a drug test that says if you flunk your drug test, you are then per se impaired. And if you're driving around and you flunked a drug test, you are guilty of drug driving.
Yeah.
And that's an inflexible policy. It doesn't address the real issue at hand, which is trying to dissuade people from driving under the influence. And it, frankly, it's just plain discriminatory. It's a way to go after the adult marijuana consumer by using the criminal laws, in this case, the traffic safety laws. And that is something that all of your listeners need to be aware of and oppose.
Yeah, let's clarify this here. In the ONDCP's drug control strategy, the quote here is, 15 states have passed laws clarifying the presence of any illegal drug in a driver's body is per se evidence of impaired driving, which means if we detect a drug in your body, you're a drugged driver, you're an impaired driver, you're a threat to public safety on the roads. Now, we've counted, there's actually 17 states, but six of them don't count cannabis metabolites, because as we all know, cannabis metabolites are going to stay in one system anywhere from 7 to, we've even seen studies of 100 days being detected after going cold turkey on this. So basically what these states are saying, and the states I'll list that have zero tolerance here, Arizona, Delaware, Georgia, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Pennsylvania, South Dakota, and Utah, zero tolerance, and some of them have mandatory 1 to 3 days in jail before you even go to trial, just because you fail for the marijuana metabolites on your drug test. It's disgusting. And especially, you know, you mentioned it being discriminatory. When we look at all the other drugs that might impair someone, PCP, cocaine, opiates, amphetamines, barbiturates, benzodiazepines, even alcohol can only be detected up to maybe 3 days. So it's just, again, rank discrimination.
And you know what's really frustrating beyond all that, too, is, as you mentioned, there are a number of states that have had these policies in effect. In some cases, these policies have been in effect under state laws for going on 10 years, in the case of Nevada and a few other states. If there was any, and I mean any, a shred of evidence indicating that the passage of these laws we're in any way reducing the number of people who are driving under the influence of drugs, we would know about it.
Yeah.
We would be hearing about it. The Obama administration would be heralding it from the White House. Cops would be talking about it. Guess what? As you mentioned, 17 states, there's not any evidence from any single one of these states indicating that passing these sort of policies actually reduces the level of drug driving. What it does do is cast such a wide net that it prosecutes people who may have used marijuana days or weeks earlier but were no longer under the influence. And in fact, there is one published study in the literature now looking at Sweden, which as a country passed one of these zero-tolerant and flexible laws many, many years ago and actually did assess whether drug driving incidents went up or they went down or they stayed the same after the passage of the law. And what they found was that the enforcement of these sort of laws didn't have any impact on reducing the number of drug drivers or reducing the level of recidivism among drivers who already had been found guilty previously of drug driving. It didn't do a thing.
Yeah, the studies are on our side here on all respects. And just, you know, from a policy point of view, it really irks me that we supposedly are so concerned about, you know, drivers under the influence of marijuana that we're willing to, you know, lock them up even if they smoked a joint a month before. Yet with alcohol, this per se standard for impairment is a 0.08 blood alcohol content, which means that below 0.08, if you can pass a sobriety test, you may not be considered impaired. And even worse, the federal government's Schedule 3 THC, the Marinol pill, actually has a warning on the side of it that says, until you know how Marinol may affect you, don't drive or operate heavy machinery, which implies to me that once you do know how it'll affect you, go ahead and get behind the wheel.
Sure, and certainly we see similar warnings with other prescription drugs as well. You know, I mentioned earlier benzodiazepines, and when you actually look at the effects of drugs on driving and drugs that are involved in serious accidents after alcohol, it's the benzos, it's the Xanax, the Valiums, drugs like that are involved in serious traffic issues all the time. Yet you hear law enforcement officials and politicians saying nothing about it because they're so busy barking about marijuana and its supposed association in traffic accidents. And that's an association, as I'm sure most of your listeners know, and anyone who's looked at Normal's papers reviewing the evidence on this, they know that the association's rather weak.
Yeah, you know, if we were really serious about impaired driving, there would be no parking lots at bars. But Paul, let's go to another angle on this, and that is this the notion of driving and cannabis, and the prohibitionists will continue to bring up these studies that say, well, you know, 80% or X percent, whatever percent they give you, of drivers were found to have tested positive for marijuana. See, marijuana's causing chaos on the highways. Can you just debunk that for us real quick?
Well, as you said earlier, this all comes down to the half-life of carboxy-THC, which is a byproduct of THC, and it's the primary byproduct that's screened for in urinalysis tests. And because carboxy-THC has a long half-life, that means it will linger in the system. It will break down over time, but it will take days, weeks, sometimes even months to be out of the system completely. This simply gives this wide net, this wide range, so that law enforcement and others can say that we're finding drivers, they've been in accidents, they have this inert, inactive metabolite in their system. That doesn't indicate that the drivers were under the influence of marijuana. In fact, in order to have the metabolite in your system, that means that the psychoactive ingredient in marijuana, the THC, already had to have been broken down.
Yeah.
And if it was broken down into the inert byproduct, that on its face likely means that the person was no longer under the influence of marijuana because the active compound was no longer in their body. The inactive one was. So this implication that because we find the metabolite in many drivers, it doesn't mean that people that use marijuana are getting into traffic accidents at any greater risk than the general population, but it does point to the popularity of marijuana. It establishes that many, many people in this country use marijuana. That, of course, isn't to say that marijuana can't impair certain driving activities. And I've outlined this on Normal's website in several papers, repeatedly. And I've argued that, look, just like with alcohol, if you're going to use alcohol, if you're going to go to a bar, you designate a driver. If you're going to use marijuana, do the same thing. Have someone else drive. If you're all going to use marijuana, stay put for a few hours after you use marijuana until the impairing effects of the drug have worn off. That's a sensible policy. But simply prosecuting everyone who may have used marijuana at some unspecified point in time, if they're ever going to drive a motor vehicle, that doesn't make any sense. And as I said, it's discriminatory on top of it.
That's right. We're discriminating against and criminalizing an entire subset of drivers based on a molecule in their body that has nothing to do with impairment. Can you imagine the uproar if we criminalize people and harass drivers based on, say, the melanin content in their... Oh, well, never mind. That probably won't work. Paul Armentano is our deputy director for Normal and the Normal Foundation, calling us from his house in the Bay Area of California. And we'll have more on this on the Normal website, normal.org. We've got all sorts of studies on driving and impairment and DUID. Check it out at normal.org. Just use the search box, type in DUID. You'll find everything you need to know. Paul, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you, Russ.
All right. We'll be right back with Leap.
You really want to legalize marijuana? Prove it. Join Normal today at NORML.org, and your donation will help us spread the growing truth about cannabis. Free speech ain't free, you know.
Free the ganja tree, it's the healing of the nation. Free the cali weed, good for meditation. Free the pot smokers, they're in a delight. Lighting up the chalice, they keep no malice.
What's the use of marijuana?
Come on, come on, come on, say,
free the marijuana.
Hear me say,
free the marijuana.
Come on, come on, come on, say,
free the marijuana.
One of the most disturbing elements of the war on marijuana is how it has made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows firsthand the futility of the drug war and reaches out to the community and to current law enforcement to end our war on drugs through legalization. It's time now to speak to one such officer in our continuing look at law enforcement against prohibition.
Welcome back, everyone. 46 after the hour, and we're joined by another fantastic speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Check them out on the website at leap.cc or copsaylegalizeddrugs.com. Leo Lawrence joins us. Thank you, Leo, for being on the show.
Yes, welcome.
According to your bio, I'm looking here, you're a former deputy sheriff and once served on the Biker Enforcement Task Force in the District Attorney's Office in San Diego. You hold a law degree and a 4-year postdoctoral study on appellate law, so you sound like the perfect person to talk about what's going on in California with respect to drug law enforcement. And specifically, I wanted to talk to you about something called CAMP, the Campaign Against Marijuana Planting. Tell us what that means in California for our listeners outside of the state and why it's so futile.
All right, that is a massive multi-million dollar multi-agency paramilitary campaign to destroy the marijuana crops in the wilderness, especially up in Northern California like Humboldt County. It's an operation that is almost like what you would see in Afghanistan, helicopters and the high-tech stuff, and it costs a lot of money.
And every year, camp goes out there. They, you know, especially out there in the Emerald Triangle, flying helicopters. You know, the fuel that it costs for the helicopter, the manpower hours to drop down. You know, these heavily armed paramilitary types into the forests and ripping up marijuana plants. And every year they come back and they say they've uprooted a new record. They got a new record number of plants that they've uprooted. And yet, it still seems like there's marijuana in California.
And they have not brought the price down or the, you know, the use. Their current sales of marijuana in California right now are $14 billion, that's B. And the potential tax revenue, if the marijuana initiative passes, is between $4 and $5 billion.
Now, you worked on the other side there. You worked on the other side with the badge, and you know people in law enforcement. You've been in that community. So do these guys know that it's futile? Do they think they're really having an impact, or do they just know it's a job and that it's all a bunch of bunk, but they just got to do their jobs anyway?
Well, having once worn a badge and carried a weapon, a 38 snub nose, 24/7, I'm aware that law enforcement, the teams, there are platoons. It's like a military operation, a paramilitary operation. And many of those guys are former military themselves, and they're reliving. They're having a blast out there. They really get pumped up when they're on one of those camp raids, that it costs hundreds of millions of dollars to do that. And the idea that all law enforcement are opposed to the marijuana initiative is just a myth.
You know, this is just one of many operations that go down in the United States and outside of California. One story that's been heating up the internet and now is starting to break through on the mainstream news is the videotape of the raid in Columbia, Missouri, where SWAT teams burst in, ended up shooting the family dog and terrorizing the mother and the child that were living there. And they end up only finding a misdemeanor amount of marijuana. And I keep reminding people that the only thing that's out of the ordinary about this raid is that it was caught on videotape and people have seen it. Can you give your perspective on this militarization of our police force and this overuse of SWAT in America and maybe some background on what SWAT should really be used for?
Well, law enforcement tends to be a very macho profession. And there are many police chiefs and sheriffs who are predicting that, well, there's going to be an increase in crime and all sorts of other evils if the marijuana initiative passes. But that's all part of this macho image that many have who are in law enforcement. And but there's many people, let me look at it, say this, that the county's registrar of voters has noticed that there is a dramatic increase in the number of young people voting today in the past 10 years. So with more young people voting, the possibility or the probability of the marijuana initiative passing in November has escalated dramatically. There's a good chance this is going to make it, especially if people get involved in the campaign.
Yeah. You know, we're getting some questions from our chat room right now. We're speaking to Leo Lawrence, a former San Diego, California deputy sheriff. And the question here has to do with that initiative. And they're basically saying that one of the things that we've always heard from police officers when we point out, you know, how cruel it is to raid people's homes and marijuana never hurt anyone, et cetera, they always come back and say, well, we're just doing our jobs. We don't make the laws. We just enforce them. But if that's the case, if they don't make the laws, why are they so in opposition to us changing the law?
That's, again, I think part of the conservative macho image of many who are in law enforcement. But there are many, many people, including in the judiciary. There's a Superior Court judge of 25 years in Orange County who has come out and even videotaped his support to regulate, control, and tax cannabis. So there really are quite a few people in law enforcement who don't like that military macho image that so many people in law enforcement project.
You know, I hear that often when I speak to former law enforcement, especially law enforcement who worked, you know, going back 30, 40, even 50 years. And they say, you know, we didn't have this in the 60s. You know, it was to protect and serve. And now it feels more like to search and arrest. And in my intro, I make that point about turning police into the enemies of the citizens. And when we've told them that they're fighting a war on drugs, eventually they start to think of themselves as soldiers and citizens as the enemy. What would you do if you could, you know, be in charge and wave a magic wand? What would you do to change that attitude amongst law enforcement?
Well, that would require a basic change like it at the police academies, and to change the basic paramilitary culture of law enforcement would be almost impossible. Mm-hmm. But yes, the police are there. Police and sheriffs are there to enforce the laws. So if you pass the initiative and they're no longer, that's no longer the law, then hundreds of millions of dollars will be diverted to education and health care.
We can only hope. And looking back at your own career as a law enforcement officer, you may have had some opportunities to interface with the public with respect to their use of marijuana. And I don't know whether you ever arrested anyone or if anyone ever went to jail based on your work as a law enforcement officer for marijuana. But if they did, how do you feel about that now?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, Lee, I'm just wondering, you know, if you were involved in arresting marijuana consumers and those marijuana consumers went to jail under, you know, your work, how do you feel about that now? Do you feel sorry that you had to do that job?
Well, as you were mentioned and cited before, the law enforcement officers, their job is to enforce the law. Mm-hmm. Many of the laws that you have to enforce, you don't agree with. But you still, that's your job.
Right.
So you have to do it, and that's what you're sworn to do.
So is your activity...
change the law, and suddenly I think the law enforcement will begin to divert those hundreds of millions of dollars to fixing potholes in the street, for example, because the interesting thing about the initiative is that the money goes into local communities. It's not for the state budget.
Let me flip this around another way. Does your work for LEAP now, is this motivated by you're just feeling overall that the drug war is wrong and shouldn't go on? Or is there a personal aspect to it that you're kind of making up for arrests of drug users you made in the past?
I have no, how can I put it? I do not regret anything that I did when I was on duty, when, you know, you're performing your job. Absolutely not.
Okay.
But I'm delighted that it looks like that this initiative will change and it'll be a lot, you know, law enforcement will start working on other things that are more important.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly what we're hoping for. And, you know, we really do appreciate all of the members of LEAP who are, you know, you have a position that the public is going to respect, having come from law enforcement. And I encourage everyone to check out leap.cc or copsaylegalizeddrugs.com in order to find out more about LEAP. They've got an entire bureau of speakers that they can get out to just about any corner of this country for a Rotary Club meeting, a city council meeting, whatever it might be. And Leo Lawrence from San Diego, you're one of the good ones, and we appreciate you joining us here on the show.
Thank you very much for passing and promoting this, and It was an interesting interview.
Oh, thank you so much, Leo. All right, folks, as we round up here, Normal Show Live, we're going to take it out today. I do want to remind folks another thing in the cannabis community calendar that I did not mention earlier today, and that is a free Mark Emery rally, which is slated to take place on Saturday, May 22nd, from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Seattle Federal Building. Now, this is tentative. We just got the word through our email networks here from Vivian McPeak. He's the director of the Seattle Hemp Fest and a longtime Pacific Northwest activist, that they have set the date for the federal building to protest Mark Emery's extradition Saturday, May 22nd, 2 to 4 p.m. at the Henry M. Jackson Federal Building, 2nd and Marion Streets in downtown Seattle. However, they're still waiting for the event permit to be approved. So take that with a grain of salt, kind of pencil it in. But if you can be anywhere in the Seattle area, May 22nd, we'd be glad to have you. Thanks for joining us here for the show. When we come back tomorrow's show, we're going to talk about medical marijuana and organ transplants, a subject dear to our heart, thanks to our own Ganja John, our engineer, who's in need of a kidney transplant. The Portland Tribune has some front page news on it, and Fox 12 here in Portland's been talking about it. We'll give you the lowdown with some special guests, doctors and activists who've been working in the community to help medical marijuana patients continue to qualify for life-saving organ transplants. For everyone here at Normal.org, I'm Radical Russ Belville. For Cannabis Carry and Ganja John, thanks for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow and every day at 1 p.m. Pacific. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Dang it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.